This year's Irish Rural Link Conference and AGM was held at the Tour Ards Arts Centre in Moat. This year was done a little differently, with the introduction of two younger groups from Moat Business College and Moat Community School joining the conference alongside the rest of the members, associates and general public, making sure it was a packed house for the morning's talks. The decline of income in rural communities and the cost of living were among the topics discussed in this year's conference. CEO Seamus Boland says people living in rural areas have a higher cost of living.
Cost of living for Irish Rural Link members has and always has been a big issue. It's ESRI reports and various reports have consistently shown that to live in rural Ireland costs an extra €100 per month above those living in urban areas. And that's all to do with transport, it's all to do with energy costs and distance, and also lack of services as well. So all of those things combine to ensure that you do have an issue with the cost of living. If you go to the petrol pumps, you see the prices are heading for €2 again per litre. They notice that the cost of motoring and indeed the cost of energy. They're also anxious about climate change. They're worried that they have to make changes in their behaviour, in their houses, in their heating systems. And they're worried about how they're going to manage that change, because for many people, the mid-range, even those with jobs, the wages are still stuck at sort of 2014-15 levels. Meanwhile, the cost of inflation, etc., is now rising. So the biggest fear is making our wage packets go a little longer.
The first talk at the Irish Rural Link Conference was with Hannah Boyland from the Vincentian MESR Research Centre. This talk was discussing the 2023 update and results of the Minimum Essential Standard of Living Research, also known as MESL. It looked at research carried out in 2023 about how much each person needs to live on.
The Minimum Essential Standard of Living Research, or MESL for short, sets out to answer the question, what do people need to be able to live with dignity? So what is an acceptable minimum for everyone? A level that no one should be expected to live below, which meets your physical, psychological and social needs. So the research places an emphasis on needs and not wants, and produces itemised baskets which detail the full range of goods and services required for individuals and households to have a minimum but socially acceptable standard of living. So the research can then be used as a practical benchmark to establish the average weekly cost of these goods and services that people have agreed are essential to enable that life with dignity. So the annual MESL data provides detail of the current minimum living costs and an analysis of income needs to support the development of evidence-based policy recommendations for the government. Through providing this continuous benchmark, the MESL research has become an integral part of the policy discourse around income adequacy, poverty and social inclusion. Let's look at the findings of the 2023 MESL update. So, in 2023, we found a considerable rise in the cost of a minimum essential standard of living across all household types, with an average increase of 10.6% across the country, a 12.9% increase for urban households, and a 5.7% increase for rural households. So over the last 3 years from 2020, the MESL has shown a cumulative increase of 18.9% nationally, an average increase of 17.8% for urban households and 21.2% for rural households. So price increases in the budget areas of food and household energy have played a significant role in the overall rise in the cost of a MESL for all household types in 2023. So if we look at food, the MESL food basket was repriced this March and showed an increase in food costs of over 20%. We saw a significant increase in the price of most items, but particularly in the cost of staples like milk, eggs, butter and bread, which make up such a big part of the minimum food basket and therefore really contributed to that large increase in the cost of food. So these items also present a larger proportion of the food basket for households with children, and so these household types have shown the highest increase in MESL food costs. Also then, if we look at household energy, home energy costs in the MESL vary depending on household type and also by area, so whether you're in an urban or rural area. But they have increased significantly for all household types over the last 3 years. So in the 12 months to March 2023, household energy costs in the MESL increased by 64% for urban households and 6% for rural households. Now, this was due to a significant increase in the cost of gas, which increased by 93% in the year to March 2023. And there was also a slight decrease in the cost of home heating oil as of March 2023 when the budgets were priced. But over the last 3 years, the Messel home energy costs increased by 117.1% for urban-based households and by over 75% for rural-based households. The Messel analysis for 2023 also has shown that the vulnerability for energy poverty has increased significantly, as income supports and energy-related benefits have not kept pace with the increasing energy and living costs.
Hannah Boyland also highlighted the extra financial pressures that those living in rural communities could face.
So households in rural areas have different and additional needs to meet the same socially acceptable minimum standard of living as households based in urban areas. Messel costs before housing are generally higher in rural areas, primarily due to additional costs related to transport and household energy. So if we look at transport, the urban Messel transport costs are based on the use of public transport, but for rural households, private transport is agreed as a minimum need because public transport options are limited and do not offer an adequate level of service to rely on in order to meet your transport needs. So we can see the impact of this if we look at the Messel transport need for an older person. The free travel pass removes the need for private transport for urban-based older adult households. However, in order to meet the transport needs of a rural-based older person, a car is required. So consequently, car-related costs like fuel, maintenance and insurance add an additional €83 per week to the Messel budget for older people living in a rural area. Household energy costs for rural household types in our research assume the use of home heating oil, and for urban household types it is assumed that natural gas is used for home heating. So in previous years, the Messel analysis has always found that heating the home using oil was more expensive than natural gas. But in 2023, this finding has reversed due to the substantial increase in the cost of natural gas, which I mentioned previously, which is caused by larger distances to access larger supermarkets. So meaning that we find that rural households tend to rely more on local-based shops to buy their staples, which have higher prices than larger supermarket chains. And then we see that as additional food costs when we compare it to the urban households. And also it should be noted that some basic health costs like GP visits, as well as childcare costs, are actually lower within our rural Messel basket when compared to their urban counterparts.
The report found that there was increases in the number of people whose social welfare didn't cover their expenditure.
The Messel research provides a unique evidence-based benchmark for assessing the adequacy of social welfare supports, the minimum wage, in-work income supports, and some social services. So when we analyse social welfare adequacy, the 2023 Messel update found that there was a decrease in the number of households experiencing income adequacy. Therefore, there was an increase in the number of households whose income provided by social welfare did not provide enough to cover their minimum essential standard of living needs. There was also an increase in the number of households experiencing deep income inadequacy, which means that their income covered less than 90% of their Messel need. So this is due to the increase in the cost of living far exceeding any increases to social welfare rates which were implemented in Budget 2023. So deep income inadequacy is more frequently found in households with older children. And this is because older children have additional and different needs which are different to children in younger age groups. So the cost of a Messel is the highest for older children aged 12 and over and cost approximately 60% more than the minimum needs of a younger child. We can see an example of deep income inadequacy when we look at a rural-based two-parent and two-child household, an older child in secondary school and a younger child in primary school, who are reliant on income provided by social welfare. Their income provided by social welfare meets just 71% of their Messel need. Deep income inadequacy is also more frequently found in single adult-headed households dependent on social welfare, like one-parent households and single adult households of working age. Analysis of the Messel data finds that the minimum needs of a two-adult-headed household costs approximately 1.5 times that of a one-adult-headed household. And this isn't because the second adult consumes less than the first, but it's due to economies of scale which are available to two-adult households in areas such as home energy, household services and household goods. So for example, it costs the same amount to heat a home for one person as it does for two, but obviously that cost is split between two people rather than one in a two-adult-headed household. So if we take a rural-based single adult of working age income provided by social welfare, this would meet just 64% of their Messel need, and therefore this household is in deep income inadequacy. So with regards to income adequacy when in employment at a salary level at or near the minimum wage, the Messel analysis shows that employment improves household income in comparison to social welfare alone, but only when secure employment and stable hours are available. However, the provision of effective in-work supports and access to services and supports such as affordable childcare and affordable rents are vital to enable minimum adequacy at a salary level that is at or near the minimum wage.
Irish Rural Link says that there's ways of reducing energy and transport costs. However, Seamus Boland says there needs to be more grants put in place so people can look at solar energy.
Let's take the average farm. One of the things that could be done immediately, I know there are talks, and certainly Irish Rural Link are campaigning hard, to allow farmers to generate their own electricity. This can be done very simply. Lots of farmers have sheds, more than adequate amount of roof space to have solar panels, but they need assistance. It needs to be grant aided, and we need that would solve a lot of the electricity costs for farmers. In terms of transport, again, we're talking about finding different ways of managing machinery, especially tractors and heavy machinery. Unfortunately, as of now, diesel is required. That doesn't seem to be changing anytime shortly. So again, government have to institute research for alternatives in this area. Now, there's possibilities with different types of oils that could be brought, artificial oil, even vegetable oil, but we've done nothing about the research in this area. So again, farmers have to use their tractors, they have to use machinery, otherwise we don't get our food, and until that, they have to use the diesel. There is some solar grants for the domestic user, we know that, and I would argue if you want to be serious about changing the heating systems and the electricity systems in houses and rural areas, then we should do more than what's there at the moment. The grant system we've proposed in our budget submission, we've proposed bringing the grant system level with a soft loan system or a guaranteed loan system, similar to the old local authority loans that used to be there when Ireland was very, very poor. And that was a loan system where the loan was guaranteed. You could bring in the credit unions in this area and it would make a huge difference to homes. And it would also encourage them to get it done. And Ireland would also meet its targets. That's the great thing. That's the other achievement we'd make.
The Local Link is one initiative that has grown year after year, which provides a service to rural communities. Here is Miriam McKenna, manager of the Local Link, to tell us what the future has in store and what measures they are looking at to take to help with the reduced incomes.
Local Link, in case people are not 100% sure, is what we consider to be the rural transport programme for the country. And there are Local Links in every county in Ireland. So we are all branded with the same brand, it's just we cover different areas. The theme of the conference this year is about reduced incomes for families. And I suppose as part of the rural transport programme, we see this quite a lot. Number one, because we're in rural areas and we're talking to people that live in rural areas and the problems that they have. So what we see now is two things. The first thing is the change in our services. So our services have changed because now instead of just having a service that brought somebody from A to B, we now have to cover an awful lot more, demands. So you're talking about people trying to get in and out to work every day and not using their car as much because the cost of the car has gone up. And then there has been reduced fares under the National Transport Authority. People trying to get to education, whether that's second level school where there is no transport or getting into third level. We see it in supporting families, so people trying to either that are looking after parents or that are looking after children or that are trying to tie all those things together. You have health appointments, which is a huge and has grown much bigger since COVID. And then you have people looking for transport for their relaxation and downtime. And so all of these things now make a much different mix for transport than we would have seen prior to this. It would have been just rural transport, really from rural areas into towns. And there's a big change there.
She continues to say that they hope to continue to grow their service.
The ambition is to continue, number one, where we are, and that is to be much more comprehensive with the services that we bring. Secondly, that the areas that we cover will cover all roads and that there will have to be connecting services. So they always talk about this first mile, last mile, where people can get, if you can get a mile to a bus stop or to a train stop, then you have your transport. And how you cover that mile is always a big debate. And I think also the fact that services are going to have to be very broad. You're going to have to plan your services differently and keep your fares very low. What we're seeing is where we used to have one bus doing a service, we now have two buses doing a service going in and up, both going opposite each other, so that you have your services are become much more frequent and people have much more access to transport.
Home energy grants and how to keep well and warm was the subject of the next talk by Ruth Buggy from Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. SEAI was established in 2002 and is fully funded by the government. She says by making some changes, you can save up to 30% on your bills.
When we talk about home energy grants, an average household in Ireland spends about €4,000 on energy. So every community that has 250 homes spends about €1 million on energy. We import 80% of our energy, which means we export 80% of what we spend on energy. So every community of 250 homes is sending €800,000 abroad every year. So it's not hard to show you how to save 10% in your energy bills, and it's really not hard to save 30% if we can make some changes. So that's an opportunity to leave 100,000 to 300,000 in that community every single year. And that was on prices pre-2022. So it's just an opportunity that there are ways of doing this. It's not all necessarily about grants. About 30% of the energy we use is down to our behaviour. So what we often see when we go back in and visit houses that have done lots of retrofit work is people running around the house in a t-shirt and the house is 23 degrees, whereas they might have been at 16 or 17 before and they were happy to wear a jumper. They've absorbed those extra comfort benefits and they've taken away the energy savings because they're happy to be in a t-shirt in December. So behaviour is important. Understanding what the choices are as well is important. So when we talk about a home, and obviously these are all averages, about 30% of the heat lost in a home goes through the roof. That makes sense. Heat rises. Energy and heat in a home is like a bucket of water, so it will find its own way out, but it tends to rise first, so it'll go out through the roof before it'll go out through the floor. Air infiltration. It's really important to ensure that there is sufficient ventilation in a home, particularly if you've got combustion devices. So that's gas stoves, solid fuel, fires, all of that. They do need oxygen to burn to keep you safe, but unintended air infiltration. The average amount of unintended ventilation in a home is the same as putting a basketball hole through the wall in your living room. You wouldn't put up with it, but when it's lots of tiny little gaps and cracks around windows and doors unintended, that can be the same. A lot of people forget that their chimney is a 4-inch hole in their roof. So you may not have the fire on, but you have the heating on and your heat is just going straight up that chimney. So there are really good options. You can look at chimney dampers and things called like chimney sheeps and things like that, where you can just stick it up the chimney and take it down when you want to, or chimney balloons when you want to light a fire. Then we talk about walls, which if you have a cavity wall, there's really good options there. And then if you don't, you're looking at internal or external insulation. Doors and windows are only around 10%. Now, I know a lot of homes were built with very large windows at a certain point in time, but on average, it's about 10% through windows and doors. And then floors is 20%, which would obviously be higher for people who might have suspended timber floors.
She's advising people to insulate their home before they look at renewable energy options.
There's the three main types of grant programmes in SEAI. So the first one is the fully funded one. So that's what we call the Warmer Home Scheme. So that's available to people on certain social welfare benefits. And that is provided fully free of charge. We send in the contractor, we pay the contractor. There's no fee to the householder. Most people know about it. It's been around since 2005. And it's making up about 50% of the total retrofit spend in our organisation. By 2030, the projected spend on warmer homes is €1 billion a year. So this programme is only growing. The thing that's reducing its capacity to expand faster is a lack of contractors in the country. So we desperately need more skills, more supply chain and all that area. It's constraining how much we can do, and that's why the waiting lists are longer than we would have intended. So the next one then is the one that was launched last year, which is called the One-Stop Shop. So the main benefit of this is all the work is done in one package by one contractor. Also, you don't have to pay the full amount of the cost of the works up front. The One-Stop Shop applies for the grant on your behalf and takes it away. So you're only paying net of the grant. So that makes things a bit easier, but it is expensive. So the average householder spend here is between about 28,000 and about 40,000. So it's a big spend for a very deep retrofit, but you're getting a home that's typically better than a new build standard today, which is a lot for a house that might be 40 or 50 years old. And then the individual grant scheme, used to be called Better Energy Homes, which has been around since 2009, allows you to incrementally do your home measure by measure as you can manage it or what's appropriate for you. So when we announced the one-stop shop last year, at the same time, the most popular grant that we have in the individual measures is attic and cavity. And that grant went up from €300 to €1,500 and €1,700 for detached homes, which is a huge increase. And this is where most people should start if one-stop shop isn't an option for them. If you have an attic that has less than a couple of inches of attic insulation in it, this is a really good place for you to start to upgrade your home. As I said, that should cover up to about 80% of the total cost for an average house for attic and cavity. And that's where you'll see the greatest return on your investment from a wall and roof insulation perspective. So if you do both of those, the chances are you could save 20 to 30% of your energy bills. You can save 20 to 30% of your energy bills. You might be in a position to look at doing another measure, such as heating controls. And then you might move into maybe solar PV in time. And eventually towards a heat pump if that's the right choice for your home in the future. So it's about doing the measures you can when you can in the right order. So there's the types of grants that are available under the one-stop shop service. So they're quite significant. They amount to about €28,000 for a detached home if they were to do all the measures. So there's a lot of funding there, but there's a lot of work involved. And it's difficult to get contractors. There's no point in saying there's not. There's a long waiting list and it takes a while to get somebody out. And even we recommend you getting a couple of quotes. Most people are lucky to get one. But it's, you know, talking to people who've had the service done, finding out who knows what they're doing and making sure that they're the right service for you. So last year in the energy emergency, the government launched a Stay Well and Warm and a Reduce Your Use campaign in response to the hike in energy prices and the fear that people were experiencing and trying to help people identify what they could do to make changes at home. So this was the Stay Well and Warm, which was just reassuring people that there were different supports available should people fall into arrears and what the challenges were. And then there was things about there'd be no disconnection for a certain period of time, the increased supports in terms of finance, the energy credits that most of us got, and the various different social welfare supports that were there as well.
She also outlined which appliances in the house use the most energy.
Most of the energy uses in home heating. Then you're talking about water heating for showers. Then you're talking the electric shower if it's direct, tumble dryer, and then the oven. So this is a comparison of what each appliance uses in the home. So you're talking about a plug-in electric heater versus gas central heating or oil central heating for 5 hours. So the challenge here is, does it make sense to heat one room? Is that appropriate for your household needs? Or is heating the whole house better? Will it create situations of damp? What does the household need? What's the right choice? The guidance is usually to make sure you turn off the heating about a half an hour before you leave the house because it's not going to drop a temperature. So you don't need it on before that time. Watch your timers, use them where you can, where you have a predictable pattern of usage and make sure it's not coming on when you're not in the house. The comparison there between, say, a slow cooker and using your oven is there as well. I said I was quite happy to not hoover the house for a couple of months, but it didn't make much of an impact in the total energy use. But it's just a way of you knowing what makes a difference. So you at least feel somewhat empowered to make reductions if you can.
Ruth Buggy works in the Community Energy Programme, and there are 750 communities across the region who want to change things in their areas.
We provide a free mentor to the communities, and really it's an awful lot of what we would normally see as community organisations, community development associations, tidy towns and that, and they want to change the situation in their own community. So we give them 100% funding to an energy master plan, and that helps identify what opportunities exist locally. And that could be a series of household building energy ratings, maybe the community centre, maybe a survey of the school to see what can be done. And then if we do it together, what are the economies of scale in terms of taking that measure? And then we have a grant programme that supports that as well. So our community's grant covers between 30 and 50% of the upgrade works in a community and up to 80% for fuel poor households. Last year it did about 12 million. This year it's looking to do about 60 million euro in work. And again, it's looking for homes to get to what's called a B2 energy rating. So that might not work for everybody. And upgraded 56 non-residential buildings as well. So we have a whole range of supports there as well for communities who want to generate electricity at scale. So this is communities who want to generate medium-scale solar and wind projects, and how to address the challenges of the planning process, grid connection, solar PV and onshore wind. So we've developed a community toolkit for them. This is government policy to try and encourage communities to look at generating renewable electricity. All these supports are freely available. We also have expert support through a trusted advisor panel. We have a range of financial grant supports. And then we have three more. So we talk about a community guide to electricity systems. So anybody who wants to understand these technical areas, these guides are really well written in terms of to a non-technical audience. So it kind of breaks down those challenges that are there, because You know, people who generate electricity are typically the same sort of people who are very professional in the area. They've been doing it for 20 or 30 years and they don't need it broken down for them. But for anybody else, it can be quite impenetrable. Also, how to finance renewable energy projects, and then looking at community groups and governance structures. So we also have a range of supports for businesses. So if you're a community organisation, you have an energy spend of more than €10,000 a year, you could get access to a free energy audit worth €2,000. So it's effectively a voucher. We have a list of consultants who undertake those energy audits, as long as you're what's called a non-obligated organisation, so you're not required to do an energy audit through various legislation already. So most community organisations would fall into this. So if you have €10,000 in spend between your transport, building, heating and electricity costs, that energy audit is there. But also there's the Energy Academy with lots of free courses that are available to everybody. So there's the €2,000 energy audit grant. And the great thing about that again is we pay the consultant directly. So the business doesn't have to find €2,000 and pay up front. They apply for the voucher, the consultant is appointed, and then you get your audit and we pay the consultant directly.
SEIA also provides grants for electric vehicles, which are only available for a new car.
So it's currently €3,500 for passenger vehicles, €3,800 for commercial vans, and there's also, it's all managed by the dealer if you're buying a new electric car. It is only available for new cars. A lot of people go looking at a second-hand car and then take the grant off the price as well, then find out that it's not available on a second-hand car. It is discounted off the first time the car is purchased only. And then there is a €600 grant for getting a charger in your home as well. So that covers about 60% of the cost of getting a charger at home.
As we headed into the break, the conversations around the younger audiences were all around their future in rural Ireland, and with the added worries of reduced incomes, could they afford to stay, or would they look to move further away to bigger cities or even beyond? Here's Moat Business College students Circa, Luke, Cara and Jennifer with their thoughts on the pros and cons of growing up in rural Ireland.
Well, there's a lot of pros and cons with it. There's, you know, there's a lot of more opportunities in kind of more urban settings, but then the rural side of it as well, you have a lot of freedom growing up, I think. For me, anyway, I grew up in the west of Ireland. I grew up in Westport. And so for me, like, I would always have to have a car. Like, public transport, not reliable. So in that sense, the costs living in rural Ireland are quite high because, yeah, you've always had to drive.
Like, the commuting and transport and stuff is a huge thing for me. Like, I live in the town, but, for example, I would have worked in Mullingar, so I was transporting back and forth, commuting by car, and it was costing like €80 to €100 a week just on diesel alone. Like, that's a huge thing. And then the cost of fuel is another thing for us. Like, we're lucky in our house, I live at home with my parents, and we have a range in the house, so it's fine. We can go to the bog and you can get your fuel and stuff, but the minute you look at oil costs, like, we can't sustain that. Like, I personally wouldn't be able to move out and afford to pay for accommodation. Like, a lot of my friends, for example, are in college and they're spending €800 to €1,000 for a room in a house with mould, and they're trying to study and go to college and pay for a car. And that's my concern as well, because I want to go on and do that after this course, but I would stress about how to afford for those things as well. Well, honestly, it makes me want to move. Like, I've had a lot of friends who have moved to Australia purely because they can't make a living here as well. And I would look at something like that in the long run, because it's scary. Like, you don't know if you can afford for a house, or even guaranteed you'd get a house. And I personally know people who have been left homeless in situations like this, with their young families and stuff. And they've had to move back to home houses. And there's people who are in two-bedroom houses with, like, 10 people living there. It's crazy.
There's just so much stress on you to try and kind of find somewhere. Basically, you're given an opportunity, and then under it there could be four or five different things they didn't tell you about until you've actually applied for that. You know, like, when you're applying for these schemes, I think you should be more aware of the VATs and stuff like that, because you're not really told that until you're in the middle of the scheme, in the middle of applying for it, and then you're landed with 40% VAT or any percentage VAT on household, on the electricity, all those different options. You're just not fully told and should be told and aware of the that there is actually going to be VATs with this. There is going to be those extra costs, but they're all hidden kind of now.
So it would be better option to move to more urban areas and more economy, because obviously, as I said, there's more opportunities, there's more things you can do, there's more like places and institutions that you can go to, and there's more options. But at the same time, do you know what I mean, it's struggle to be able to have those opportunities to move away. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot that comes with it, and as Luke said, there's a lot of underlying things that you're not told about until you actually do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And there's a lot that actually comes with moving away, and like, do you know what I mean, having the kind of opportunities to be able to go to those different, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that comes with it, and it's a very struggle, particularly for younger people. Do you know what I mean? And it's not just, I'm not saying that it's only younger people that are going through it. Do you know what I mean? Every age is going through it, and it's something that needs to be resolved. I understand that there's a lot of awareness and stuff, but there's no solutions that are coming to it.
I know there's the Susie grant and stuff, but like, I wouldn't qualify for that because my parents do make enough money, but they don't make enough money to pay my way through college. So I wouldn't qualify for certain grants like that, but I'd prefer if there was, not prefer, but it would be ideal if there was changes made in that way to help fund people get through college, because you need an education to get a job that's going to sustain like the cost of living and everything as well. Because again, like mature students as well, you're still trying to pay for a house, you're paying for an education, you're paying for your transport, depending on where you live.
I mean, it's coming to the point where we kind of have to study somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's getting to the point of where we're very limited options of what we can do and where we can go. Do you know what I mean? So it's more, sorry, it's more that we kind of have to, we're kind of forced to, do you know what I mean? Especially with the prices, the cost of living, the cost of, do you know what I mean, as Circa was saying, the cost of fuel, do you know what I mean? It's very hard, particularly for the younger generation, to be able to get those opportunities to make a life for ourselves, let alone, do you know what I mean, even survive.
Yeah, I've definitely considered emigrating in the last couple of years. A lot of my friends have gone to Australia, to Canada, to places like that, which is a huge thing in rural Ireland, everywhere in Ireland, but especially in rural areas, that there isn't opportunities. And when you go abroad to places like Australia, say in hospital, there's much better working conditions and much fairer salaries, that sort of thing. So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but I've definitely considered emigrating myself, yeah.
I've considered it. Definitely, I feel like we're kind of, you have to move. Like, you're being thrown around with all these different prices. You go to Dublin, they're high. You go anywhere in the country, you're just kind of, it's kind of like you're on a pinball machine. Mm. You're just thrown around to wherever and trying to find just any way you can actually get an affordable house with and make the cost of living easier on yourself.
Yeah, I mean, even now, like, it used to be that places like Dublin, Galway, that the rents would be really high, and now it's across the board all over the country. So even if you're looking for an apartment in a small town, it's still going to be a lot more expensive than it was a few years ago. So there isn't the same opportunities for people, for young people, to be moving out. A lot of people now are living at home, young people, and that's, it restricts the freedom a lot, I think, for different people on different scales. But living at home is obviously not ideal when you're in your 20s. You know, you want to be able to move out. So,
and particularly was, especially in rural areas, do you know what I mean? More the younger people kind of get guidance from the older generation. And the fact that we have to move, we don't have that influence anymore. Do you know what I mean? We don't have those guidance sets to be like, oh, here, this is what you do, this is what you start, how you start. Do you know what I mean? This is like, this is where you can go. Do you know what I mean? But the fact that we have to move, we don't have those influences. We don't have that guidance of, do you know what I mean, particularly with the older generation, because they've been through it. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of more like we're kind of put at a dead end. Do you know what I mean? So it's more like restricting. It's more like we're kind of claustrophobic in the fact of what we can do and where we can go. Do you know what I mean? And what to do if we have to emigrate.
The talks of education and grants wasn't only on the students' lips. Here is board member Michael Kenny, a former lecturer in the Department of Adult and Community Education at Maynooth University.
For a lot of urban people, it's more difficult for them to take advantage of all those grants that are available compared to the rural people. So all these things are very complex. It's important that we understand them. Well, I think when you compare now, for instance, the fact that like social welfare is obviously, in supporting people in need is very, very important, of course. So the biggest part of our budget goes to that. But then we have after that education, which is a very large part of our budget. I can't remember the exact figure now at the moment. And the other thing then is health. But in a sense, all those, education is central. If we've it's proven, if we have a better educated population, it'll help the health budget, because we won't be doing as much damage to our bodies, and certainly for mental health, it would help as well. So education is central. So we've got to invest more in education, but we've got to invest education that goes out to people, not just education in schools, because education needs to be the whole of life. I'm at the stage now, I'm in my 60s, I still have so much to learn, and there's so many interesting things happening around me. I've got to learn about it. There needs to be innovative education, there needs to be attractive education, it needs to become sexier so that people want to learn.
The final talk of the day was with Teresa Kelvin, the Chief Executive of Rural Action based in Northern Ireland. She talked about their new collaboration with the Irish Rural Link called Synergy, bringing the south and north of Ireland together to combat the cost of living.
So Synergy is about collaborating and sharing information and learning from each other and our different regions. I suppose we don't want to reinvent the wheel, but we can consider if the existing wheels can be made a bit smoother, a bit better, and run more efficiently. So are there things that we're doing in Northern Ireland that we can share with yourselves to benefit rural communities and vice versa? And I suppose this morning has shown us a lot of things that we can learn from yous and obviously take back into our communities and do a bit further research on. So that's all part of what we want to do under the Synergy project. So in terms of what we'll do in the project, it's a very short project. So we'll be hopefully commencing shortly, and we'll issue an online survey to a representative sample of rural groups across the island of Ireland, both in terms of north and south. We will carry out more focused discussions with a further representative sample, and we'll collect and collate this data and put it into a report for wider dissemination, and would hope that we can work together as two organisations to seek funding to further support the findings of this. The project itself is small, so we don't want to be raising expectations. I mean, success for us will be in strengthening our relationships on a north-south basis and the identification of common and shared issues on a north-south basis. We see it as the first building block of what we hope will become a strong foundation for future work on a shared island basis. And I suppose we look forward to working with Tara, Seamus, James and the whole team, and thank the Shared Island Civic Society Fund for enabling this work to take place. And I suppose finally, we also look forward to engaging with rural communities and ensuring that their voices are part of the project. So thank you very much.
As well as the overall cost of living, by the end of the conference, the thoughts were quite clear from many of the members on what they needed to look at going forward, including alternative energy, education, and helping the younger community thrive in the rural areas. Here's Dermot Levy with some of the final words on what we could work on to ensure a positive rural future in Ireland.
An awful lot of that is reflected back on the cost of oil, because it affects the guys that grow the crops. It affects the haulage. It affects the everything. And it has a ripple effect then. So everybody just tries to cope as best they can. But I think, to get going into alternative energy is important. As a result then, the houses are scarce and for students and all of that. I mean, It's very costly. No matter where you go now, the cost of living has gone up. You know, I've been in Canada over the summer, had a daughter there, and the cost of living since the last year I was out has gone through the roof. Like, and it happens in England, everywhere. You know, so it's an international problem, you know, I think. But there is a need there's need in a lot of areas. I know in childcare now, I'm very much involved in childcare, you know, to be able to keep staff. I thought another point that came up was in education and the whole need for adult education, or to kind of train young people into that whole sphere that, you know, they can learn by what's happening in their own lives. And I think that's very important in relation to, we've had suicides on the rise and a lot of people giving in to pressure. But I think if that is something to be looked at, and I think that's an opportunity for Irish Rural Link to get involved. I would be all in favour of free education, but I think the point that they were making is maybe we might be very confined to the subjects and the old wider area hasn't been covered, and that's where kind of adult education comes in. There's a role there for adult education, so that we become very conscious of people rather than just of things.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Rural Link Annual Conference podcast, brought to you by Midlands 103 and narrated by Sarah Casserly.